Priya Bandhu, Ani Bhaginino, Namo Buddhaya, Jai Bhim. So I'm very happy indeed to be back here in the Mahavihara. I arrived from Delhi yesterday, and the day before that I came from London. And it's very nice to be here with you all again. I don't feel any more that I'm going somewhere different. I feel just as at home here as I do in England. And of course, well, in English we have a saying, home is where your heart is. So my heart is in India. And of course, it's not really India that my heart is in. It's my many, many friends in India. So I'm very happy to be addressing you over these next 3 nights here at the Mahavihara. And you know that my theme is well, the Buddha's Dhamma as science. You know that one of the reasons why Baba Sahib chose the Buddha Dhamma was that it was not in contradiction of science. So I want to explore this theme in various different ways. I want to try to show you in what way the Buddha was, if you like, a scientist. But first of all, what is science? Well, the point about science is that scientists don't start off with a theory. They don't start off by saying, Brahma created the universe. They don't start off with that sort of idea. They start off by asking, what can we actually see? What do we observe? I've never seen Brahma. So I've no evidence for him creating the universe, whoever he is. It's just an idea. But what the scientist does is look at the phenomenon that we can observe. And he tries to discover the laws that work within nature. So, well, the Buddha was like this. He didn't come with a theory. What he was concerned with was to find out why human beings suffer and how they stop suffering. He said, well, everywhere you look, you see suffering. You see the obvious suffering that people are ill, they're sick, they're beaten up, they're hungry. You see all that. You don't have to look very far. You don't have to have special microscopes to see suffering everywhere. And in the same way, well, the Buddha said, there's a deeper kind of suffering as well. Well, you see this in my own country. You don't see so many people, you know, suffering from poverty or oppression. It's a very wealthy country. But if you look a little bit people are not happy. And the Buddha said, well, if you look closely at any human being, you'll find suffering is there. So he said, the only thing I'm interested in is how do we get rid of suffering? How do we become free from suffering? So he said, in order to do that, we need to look at the causes of suffering. So the Buddha's science was directed to finding the reasons, the causes of human suffering, and the way to end it. So what the Buddha did is he looked at suffering and he saw, well, because of this, suffering arises. Of course, what he said was that our suffering arises because we cling, because we crave. But I'm not going to go into that right now. What I want to point out is this method of the Buddha's. He's concerned with suffering and he wants to end it. And he applies clear thinking, observation to the phenomenon of suffering. And he did this in many, many areas. So what I want to do today is to illustrate the way the Buddha investigated. He analyzed the situation till he got to the thing that you could change. He wanted to find out what it was that we could do something about. So I'm going to tell you a story from my own recent experience. And in that story you'll see how the Buddha helped me to deal with a particular situation. I think many of you know that I go twice a year to a country called Hungary in Europe. And in Hungary there are a small number of people who originally came from India. There are about 6% of the population of Hungary, about 6 lakhs. They're called gypsies. Some of them still speak a language that's very close to Hindi. And, they look like you. Some of them, look just as if they're straight from India. Some of them are a bit more like me because there's been interbreeding, as it were. But I'm ashamed to say that they are Europe's Dalits. That they're very badly treated, in Hungary especially. Even in England, they're still not well treated. But in much of Central Europe, they're very badly treated indeed. They're extremely poor, so that the village where our friends work, it's not England, but it's quite wealthy. Then you come to the edge of the village, the road stops, No street lights. No running water. Until recently, no electricity. So it's just like the old ghettos, the old basti in India. And the white population are afraid of them and hate them. And some of our friends, some of our Dhamma Mitras come from that community and they're working there. They formed a school. And they've launched a microcredit organization inspired by what you're doing here. And there's a very strong women's sangha there. Because the men all drink. It's the sickness of poverty, isn't it? So when I was there, everybody was very worried. I should tell you, of course, that the school they've started is called the Dr. Ambedkar Gymnasium, which means high school. And their organization is called the Jai Bhim Network. And it'd be very good if more of you had contact. Bharat is here, and he spent some time with them. Yeah. I was there after he left, and all over the walls there were quotations from Baba Saheb, which Bharat had put up. Anyway, when I was there, the people were very worried. A political party had been launched, which really is Shiv Sena is the best parallel. In some ways worse than Shiv Sena. Violently anti-Gypsy. And in recent elections, they got a very high percentage of the vote. In that village where we were, 40% of people voted for this party, Yopik. So our friends were very worried. There was going to be a meeting with the local police chief because this party was going to carry out a campaign there. Electioneering. And our friends were very, very worried about what was going to happen. When this had happened in a nearby village, there had been a riot. 100 gypsies had been arrested. And not a single white person. So I was talking to them about the Dhamma. And somebody said to me, "Look, the Dhamma's all right. The Dhamma's okay. But it's got nothing to say to us. How can the Dhamma help us in our situation with Yopik coming?" So I was silent. And I knew I had to answer carefully. And I remembered a sutta in the Pali Canon where the Buddha speaks about social disharmony and violence. And so I got out that sutta and I explained it to them. I was able to show them the Buddha's scientific inquiry into the causes of social disharmony. And so some of them found this very interesting indeed, very useful indeed. And they found that it helped them in dealing with the situation. So tonight I want to explain that sutta to you so that you can see how the Buddha works. And of course what they face in Hungary, people face here in India too. So it's relevant directly to this situation here. So the Buddha is faced with the question, why is it that people resort to violence? How is it that human beings who have so much in common end up in violence? What we want, what we need is quite simple really. But wherever you go in the world, I've travelled a lot in the world, people basically want the same things. In a way, it's not that complicated at all. And yet, the history of humanity is soaked in blood. So this is a very important question. It's not only a question about society as a whole. It's a question about our own relations amongst us. How is it that in the Buddhist world in India, there's so much division, so much strife? Even in our Sri Ratna community, sometimes there's strife. So we need to understand the causes of that strife so we can do something about it. So the subject under the microscope is violence. Violence. Well, the Buddha says, taking up the stick and sword.
आणि बुद्ध ज्याला म्हणतात की हिंसा म्हणजे काय तर काठी घेणं आणि तलवार घेणं
dispute argument
ज्याच्यामध्ये वादविवाद आहे भांडणं आहे
wounding with words
शब्दांनी घायल करणं आहे
sometimes words are even more effective weapon than a sword
तलवारीपेक्षाही कधी कधी शब्द फार मोठं शस्त्र बनतं
rumor
अफवा
That's a very bad one. We're very bad at that here in India.
तर भारतामध्ये अफवांच्या बाबतीत आपण फारच वाईट आहोत.
And the scandal.
आणि त्याचबरोबर वेगवेगळ्या प्रकारची लफडी.
That's what's under the microscope.
तर ही गोष्ट जी आहे ती आता आपल्या सूक्ष्मदर्शकाखाली आहे.
It's a very nasty beast.
फारच भयंकर असा हा प्राणी आहे.
I think let's stand up, shall we? So yes, this is what we're trying to understand. Now, what the Buddha does is he goes back step by step by step by step until you get to the origin. But it's not so easy for me to explain it in that order because there's too much that needs explaining. So I'm going to take you through the Buddha's understanding, as it were, from the origin up to the result. But you can see that what the Buddha did is he thought violence. What does violence come from? What's the cause of that? What's the cause of that? What's the cause of that? This, for those of you who will notice, is a Nidana chain. You know the 12 links in the Nidana chain in the wheel? So this is a Nidana chain applied to violence. So the Buddha says, well, where should we start? Well, let's just start with what is innocent. There's another pen, is there? Oh. We start with sparsha. Sparsha, it means contact, as you all know. But in the context of Buddhist thought, it means your experience, your basic experience of the world around you. It means the contact of your senses with the objects of experience. That was contact. I'm sorry, it's about that. We're not supposed to start with violence, we have to end there. But my hand touched his arm. And the nerves in his arm sent a signal to his brain. Contact. So that's where we start. That's happening to all of us all the time. If you're looking at me, your eyes are making contact with my form. Your ears are making contact with the sound waves from my voice. Our voices are vibrating the air, which is going right inside your ear and sending a message to your brain. So that's contact. But what happens very quickly after contact? Ow. Ah, nice.
Sangle.
Koop sangle. So, after sparsha, almost immediately with sparsha, comes vedana. Now, in Buddhist language, vedana doesn't just mean pain. I know that in modern Indian languages, vedana means largely painful feeling. But in Sanskrit, in Pali, it means pleasure or pain or neither. All sparsha, all contact, all sensation is either pleasant, painful, or neither one nor the other. This happens very immediately with our bodies. If you taste something nice on your tongue, pleasure. If a thorn goes into your foot, pain. Often there's nothing in particular, neither pleasant nor painful. But this is basic experience. this happens to all of us. This is where we start. So what happens then? When we have contact and feeling, what happens next? Well, we label what's happening. I hit Yashasaga, that hurts. Then he says, Subhuti is hitting me. So we label our experience. We say, this is what that is, this is what that is. Of course, in human beings, we do this with words. But even animals have some sort of discrimination. This is called samya. I think this is another word that means something slightly different in modern language, does it?
Yes, so there's a concept.
Concept. No, in Pali and Sanskrit, it means this act of interpreting the world. We make sense of the world around us. We look at all the things that are affecting us and we label them. And that gives us the chance to deal with them. Because Yashasaga can see that it's Subhuti who's hitting him, he can do something about it. Because you can say, that is a thorn in my foot, you can take it out. So samnya in the original languages of Buddhism means this act of discrimination, this act of labeling. So this is happening all the time. While we're talking here, all these three are going on for you. You're recognizing the situation. If you just if you didn't do samnya, it would be just like a big soup.
Soup.
There wouldn't be this and then that. There would just be everything without any form, any difference. So our ability to discriminate, say this is that, is makes the world manageable for us. Now, so far, what we've talked about is all common, not just to human beings, but to animals too. You know, you see a cow. You know, the cow sort of licks things. And what it's doing is trying to decide through Sparsha and Vedana whether it can eat it or not. So the cow divides the world into what it can eat and what it can't eat. Animals also discriminate what is dangerous and what is friendly. They decide, well, this is part of my pack, my herd. That's not. This is aple log, that's aple log nahi. So animals do this. They discriminate. Of course, they don't use words. It's not conscious in that way. But they are sorting the world out from the point of view of their own survival. But human beings bring something new. Sometimes we behave just like animals, but there's something more to us. So what's that? We can think. We can think. We don't always do it, but we're capable of thinking. In all other words, we escape from the immediate situation. An animal is just locked in the present situation. For an animal, there's no tomorrow, there's no yesterday. But we can think, this is me now, tomorrow I will do that. Well, you know, there are lots of young people here. You have to say, well, I'm going to get my exams, then I'm going to go and get this kind of job or that kind of job. You can have plans for your life. You can think about your past and you can come to an understanding of it. You can think about who you are, what you want. So it's as if our ability to think takes us out of the immediate situation and gives us some perspective. So what comes after samnya is in Sanskrit vitarka. That's thinking. That's the act of dividing our world up and then reflecting upon it. And well, thinking is a big evolutionary development. You see that evolution is quite slow up until the point that human beings emerge. But when human beings emerge, they have this capacity for thought. And they can create the remarkable phenomenon of modern civilization. And we'll be seeing later that they can also, because of this faculty, undertake some kind of spiritual path. So vitarka is a very, very important development. It represents a big step forward in the whole of evolution. It's thought that enables us to reflect on our situation and make it better. It's thought that enables us to reflect on ourselves and make ourselves better. All an animal can do is eat, sleep, reproduce, die. That's all it can do. Its consciousness, its awareness is very, very limited to what's immediately happening. But with human beings, this faculty of thought comes into existence. We can say I. We can say you. We can say world. We can say future. We can say past. So we can act in different ways. So this vitarka is a wonderful thing. It's a very, very good weapon in the battle for evolution. But every sword has two blades, two sides to it. It has one side that can cut for the good, one side that can cut for the bad. The problem is, we don't think clearly. So what the Buddha says is that our thinking gets out of control. What happens next is prapancha. So prapancha literally means to spread out. To proliferate. Yeah. I was trying to catch him with a big English word, but he was ready for me. Yes, our thinking doesn't go in a direct way. So I hit Yashasaga. So this process goes on. Sparsha, Vedana, Samya, he identifies what's going on. He starts to reflect on what's happening. Then his thinking gets out of control. It goes wild. He starts to think, well, yesterday, when Subhuti arrived, he didn't call me. I think he must hate me. He's just taking advantage of this situation on the stage to get out his ill will. I can see his mind working right now. And it's not just Subhuti, it's English people. Look what they did to India for 200 years. It's just the same thing. Quit India. So it all goes wild, it spreads out and out and out. So mixed up in it, it's all your previous experience. And particularly your unresolved conflicts inside. This is what's called anushaya. Which means, is that a modern word?
Anushaya was a name.
Anushaya here means tendency, underlying tendency. So it means, if you're in a bad mood, you come into a situation. Something happens. Something quite innocent. And you're suddenly angry. It's as if you're looking for an excuse to be angry. Underlying tendencies in many fields. There are many, many different kinds of underlying tendencies. There can be craving. You feel unsatisfied, you feel some want. So that gets mixed up with what's going on. You sometimes feel this, don't you, particularly with anger. Somebody gets angry with you. And you feel, well, I didn't do anything. And you feel, well,
They were just looking for somebody to be angry with. So all these underlying tendencies get mixed up with your thoughts as they spread out. And by this time you're a long, long way away from what actually happened. You're painting a big picture. And that begins to take the form of a, well, what should we call it? A theory, a structure.
This is a little bit more complicated.
Prapancha Samya Sankhara. It means the your thoughts take a form, they create a structure. They take a fixed set of views, organization, structure. And that sort of solidifies. So a very, very clear example, caste system. The caste system is completely unreal. It doesn't correspond to anything actually there. It's created by prapancha. It allows people to explain their own situation, why other people are as they are, and so on. It explains their own situation, why other people are as they are, etc. So it takes on a solid form in your mind. It takes on a form that you then look at all your experience through. So the prapancha samya sankhara caste people carry around in their minds. They interpret their experience through that. When they meet people, they fit them into this construction. They don't deal with what they're actually experiencing. They deal with what they're experiencing through the structure of their system. So new experience is fitted into this structure. So you're carrying around this like a pair of spectacles. Like a pair of spectacles. You know that you can, in the fairground, you get this, you can get spectacles that make everything go funny shapes. When you put the spectacles on, everybody goes very wide in the middle and very thin at the bottom. It distorts everything you see. So that's what you've constructed. You constructed distorting spectacles. So everything you see is twisted, distorted. Okay. I hope that's on the camera. So the you can see the way it all unfolds. So we're ending up in a not in an immediate experience of what is, but in a distorted experience. You could say that this is what really is. This is real experience. But this is distorted experience. And on that basis, we meet other people. Those other people have their own secondary reality, their own distorted reality. The two clash. And then you have violence. So let's take the example of the Gypsies and the White Hungarians. So you have a White Hungarian peasant. Peasant. He's not very wealthy, and well, Hungary has been through big problems. It's been through big economic problems. It used to be part of the communist world. But since the collapse of the communist world, well, in some ways it's got better, in many ways it's got worse. So what begins to happen is that people's experience, their real experience, is of insecurity. What's happening? Where's my job? How am I going to feed my children? They also have a feeling of humiliation. Hungary is a country that's been ruled by other people for 400 years. And, well, the people have a feeling of humiliation. That's their feeling. That's their experience. So they start to think about that. What's going on? Where is the cause? And those thoughts start to spread out. And they mix up with their own underlying tendencies of anger, insecurity, upset, and so on. Being upset. And those thoughts spread out to form a system which explains their suffering and what they must do. The problem is the Gypsies. It's because of the Gypsies that we are suffering. The Gypsies are not proper human beings. Look, they've got that dirty skin, they're not nice and white like us. They're dirty. They don't care about society. So they're the problem. What we must do is send them back to India. We must get rid of them. At least we must control them. We must have a strong police force to control the Gypsies. All of this from an experience of some insecurity, because you've just got a notice saying you've lost your job.
तर ही सगळी गोष्ट कशातून घडलेली आहे तर असुरक्षिततेमुळे घडलेली आहे. एका अशा नोटिशी मधून मी ज्यात लिहिलं होतं की तुमचं आता काम राहिलेलं नाही त्याच्यातून ते निर्माण झाले.
यू जॉईन विथ मोर अँड मोर पीपल हू हॅव अ सिमिलर एक्सपिरियन्स टू यू.
आणि मग इथे काय होतं की अनेक तुमच्यासारखा अनुभव असलेले लोक तुमच्यासोबत यायला सुरुवात होतात.
Some people take advantage of this. They want power. So they manipulate your anxiety and they create this horrible system. Every time they see a gypsy, they don't see another human being. They see the person who's the cause of their problem.
आणि म्हणून जेव्हा कधी जिप्सी त्यांना दिसतो तेव्हा दुसरा एक मनुष्य प्राणी म्हणून त्याच्याकडे बघत नाही तर त्यांच्या दुःखाचं कारण म्हणून त्याच्याकडे बघतात.
Now something's going on the other side too.
आता दुसऱ्या बाजूने पण काहीतरी घडत आहे.
If you're a gypsy, well, your experience is of great poverty.
जर तुम्ही जिप्सी असाल तर तुमचा अनुभव भयंकर गरिबीचा आहे.
Of isolation from the wider society.
एकूण समाजापासून दूर ठेवल्याचा एकांत असण्याचा तुमचा अनुभव आहे.
Lack of education.
तुमच्याकडे शिक्षण नाहीये, शिक्षणाचा अभाव आहे.
Most of the gypsies have until very recently very little education. When gypsy children go to school they're declared mentally subnormal.
आणि जेव्हा लहान मुलं जिप्सी लहान मुलं जायचे तेव्हा त्यांना एक प्रकारे मानसिक आजारी म्हणून घोषित केलं जायचं.
And they're put in special classes where they're not taught anything.
आणि मग अशा प्रकारे त्यांना विशेष अशा वर्गात ठेवलं जायचं.
So the gypsies have no real knowledge of the wider world.
आणि म्हणून जिप्सीना या संपूर्ण विस्तृत जगाचं काही ज्ञान नाही.
And what they experience is that these other people, these white people, are out to get them.
आणि मग त्यांनी एक प्रकारे आपल्या मनामध्ये असं ठरवलं की हे जे पांढरे लोक आहेत सातत्याने आम्हाला पकडण्याचा प्रयत्न करतात.
So while I was explaining this to a group of my friends there, one of them spoke up.
आणि जेव्हा ही गोष्ट मी माझ्या मित्रांना विश्लेषित करून सांगत होतो तेव्हा त्यांच्यापैकी एक जण म्हणून बोलला.
He said there's only one thing we can do.
ते म्हटले की आम्ही एकच गोष्ट याच्या संदर्भात करू शकतो.
Get weapons and kill them.
आणि तो म्हटला की आता शस्त्र काढा आणि त्यांना मारून टाका.
That's the only way we'll solve this problem.
आणि हा एकच मार्ग आहे ही समस्या मिटवण्याचा.
Those white people, they'll never accept us.
ह्या पांढऱ्या लोकांनी कधीच आम्हाला स्वीकारलेलं नाही.
We just kill them all.
आता म्हणून त्यांना मारलं पाहिजे.
We've got weapons, we can do it.
आमच्याकडे शस्त्र आहे आम्ही ते करू शकतो.
So there you are, violence, dispute.
जेव्हा त्यांनी असं म्हटलं तेव्हा तिथे हिंसा आहे, भांडण आहे.
Because they've got a perspective which is as fixed as the other side's.
जसा इतर लोकांचा पक्का दृष्टिकोन आहे तसा जिप्सींचा सुद्धा त्यांच्या संदर्भात पक्का दृष्टिकोन आहे.
Of course our own friends are looking at things in a different way.
निश्चितच आपले तिथले जे मित्र आहेत ते प्रति ह्या गोष्टीला वेगळ्या पद्धतीने पाहतात.
They're influenced like by the Buddha Dhamma and by Baba Sahib.
Kanza to anubhav ahe to Buddha Dhamma ne ani Baba Sahib ani prabhavit zalela ahe.
It was very very impressive. I went to that meeting with the local police force.
Mi tya sthanik polisan sobat ji meeting zaleli hoti tyachya madhe gelo hoto.
And many of the gypsies were very very upset, very angry, very rowdy, making lots of noise, interrupting and so on.
Tar anek gypsy tithe hote te faras niraash zalele hote, faras ragavlele hote ani far zorzorat tithe aawaz karat hote.
But those who are connected with us were very reasonable, very strong, but very clear, but very human in their response.
आणि जे आपल्याशी संबंधित आहेत ते जिप्सी मात्र तिथे फार योग्य पद्धतीने वागत होते, फार शांत होते, फार स्पष्ट होते आणि मानवी माणूस म्हणून जणू काही वर्ताव करत होते.
So in this analysis the Buddha shows us how it all goes wrong.
आणि ह्या प्रकारच्या विश्लेषणामध्ये बुद्ध आपल्याला दाखवत आहे की कसं चुकीचं घडतं.
Violence is the clashing of two contrary views of the world.
दोन देशांचा जो दृष्टिकोन आहे ह्या जगा संदर्भातला त्याच्यातून जणू काही हिंसा निर्माण होते.
And those views of the world are not real.
परंतु जगाचा जो दृष्टिकोन असतो तो मात्र सत्य असत नाही.
They come about because we lose control of our thinking.
ते ह्यासाठी मी म्हणतात कारण आपल्या विचारांवरचं आपलं नियंत्रण आपण धरून बसतो.
And we can create a construction, a structure that explains our experience.
आणि मग आपण अशा प्रकारचं एक प्रारूप तयार करतो, एक आराखडा तयार करतो जो आराखडा आपला जो अनुभव आहे त्याला विश्लेषित करतो.
But we've got right away from what actually is going on.
परंतु आपल्याला काय करायचंय तर नेमकं जे काही घडलेलं आहे, सत्य घडलेलं आहे त्याच्यापर्यंत यायचं.
So the Buddha said that what you have to do is get back to vitarka.
आणि म्हणून बुद्ध काय सांगतात की पुन्हा असं घडत असेल तर पुन्हा कुठे जा, वितर्काकडे जा.
of your head, as we say. Your head.
What is that expression?
You know, just the thinking. Yeah. You know, sometimes something upsets you. And you sit to meditate. What goes on in your mind? You're just thinking constantly about what they said to you, what you will say back, what they may say back to you, and so on. I did a retreat recently, and some things that had upset me. So I was thinking, what will I say? Then what will they say? Then I found I was getting upset at what they might say. And they hadn't said anything. But your mind goes right up here. And you can even blame that other person for saying something to you which they never said. You just thought they might say it. So the Buddha says, come back down to what really is going on. He said, first of all, come back down to Smriti. See what's going on right now in your body. This is probably the most important basic piece of advice the Buddha has to give. Be aware of your body. When you go up here, you lose contact with immediate experience. So come back down to what is actual. It can be quite good even just to come back to your breathing. Your mind goes off right up there. Come back to your breathing. Come back to the feeling of your feet on the ground. If you're sitting down, come feel the chair beneath you. If you're talking to somebody, don't just concentrate on the words they're using, look at them. One needs to get out of this whole construction of prapancha. Come back down to what really is going on. Then, well, think about the situation from the point of view of what is best for me, what is best for everybody. Sheila, reflect on the situation to see what can you do that will bring about a good result for you and a good result for others. If my gypsy friends try to fight back at this big political party, there are not enough of them. It'll just confirm the impression of them. Yes, they should defend themselves when they're attacked. But they need to use other weapons, political weapons, social weapons, and the human weapons. And our Dhamma Mitras in Hungary have launched a political party, which is an Ambedkarite political party in Hungary. using Dr. Ambedkar's message of democracy, liberty, equality and fraternity as its basis. Because that's best for everybody. If gypsies can find good representation, if they can join with others who have goodwill, well, they can create a better society for everybody. So Sheila means coming back down to what's going on and trying to see the best thing that you can do for yourself and for everybody. But you need to work on this tendency to go into prapancha. The mind gets out of control. So you need to get your mind under control. Then you'll be able to work for the best. That means learning to meditate. When you meditate, you can face difficult situations much more calmly, much more smoothly. It's not passive, it's not withdrawal. It's making sure that your mind is clear and pure so that you can face the situation in the best possible way. You remember that Baba Sahib said that social workers should not just do social work. They should work on themselves. So if we can come back down to our basic experience, we can learn to control our minds. Then we can think clearly about the situation. We can understand it as it really is. We can develop prajna. So we see the real nature of the situation we're in. So the Buddha said, this is the way that violence comes about. This is the way that disharmony comes about. It comes out of the human mind. It comes out of the human mind out of control. So the Buddha said we need to get it back under control. Get out of all that proliferation. I often think that one of the most amazing things about the caste system is how stupid it is. It's obviously not true. Any sensible person can see that. But crores and crores of people can't see it. Because they're lost up here. They've lost contact with what is real. And everything they see, everything they do, comes to them through their spectacles of caste. There are many, many forms of this. In my own country, there's racism. Caste is not the only injustice in the world by any means. Well, I've been explaining to you what the situation is like in Hungary. But all over the world there's violence, disharmony. If you look at it, you'll find the same process at work. For instance, in the Middle East, in
Palestine.
The inhuman treatment of one set of people by another. If you talk to them, they've got all sorts of reasons for acting as they do. But it's all madness. You could say that this is a form of madness that most people suffer from. They're lost in a mind out of control. So this is the Buddha's scientific inquiry into violence. The Buddha looked at what he could really see. He didn't say, it is God's will. It is God's will or it is violence. It's the, you know, the good gods against the bad gods. It's Ravana and Rama, yeah, all that, yeah. I forgot my Hinduism, sorry. You know, all sorts of explanations. But what do you actually see when you look? You know, in the Middle East, what they say, infidels. Kafirs. The Muslims say they're kafirs. The Jews say we are the chosen people of God. The Buddha says prapancha. And he sees what is really there. Who is this God? I've never met him. Or in fact, he tells a story, doesn't he? You know, there's a story of one of the Buddha's monks who had the capacity to see the God. So he wanted to know the origin of the universe. So he thought, I'll go and ask that God. So he went to that God and said, please, Bhagavan, who created the universe? And Brahma said, I am the great God Brahma. He said, well, yes, I know that, but that's not what I asked you. So Brahma again said, I am the great God Brahma. He said, well, look, I know that's okay, but that's not what I'm asking you. So Brahma said, come over here. He said, I want to go where the others can't hear me. He said, don't tell anybody. I don't know. But if you want to know, go and ask the Buddha. So that's the way the Buddha humorously dealt with that sort of issue. You know, this is just prapancha. It's not something you can see, not something you can touch, not something you can experience. It's just too much thinking, getting out of control. And yes, the Buddha said, just come back to what you really know. Look at what you can see. Then you will escape this construction of thought that leads to suffering, that leads to conflict.
Something else?
and conflict. And you can be a force for harmony in the world. So, yes, we've seen how the Buddha was a scientist in relation to conflict. How his analysis of the situation of conflict enables us to see what we must do. We must be mindful of what is really going on. Mindful of sparsha, mindful of vedana. We must use our vitarka, our thinking, to see what is best for us, best for others. We must practice meditation so we get out of the habit of prapancha. If your mind is concentrated, no prapancha. And we must use our thinking to understand the real nature of life. Then we can escape our own suffering. And we can help others to gain peace, to gain harmony. And it's very interesting with my gypsy friends, in India. Because of the approach that they're taking, they're creating some harmony. Some of the people from that village, some of the white people are from that village, are starting to work with them. And, well, this is the Buddha's message. So, I hope you've been convinced that the Buddha is the true scientist. And over the next two nights, we'll look a bit closer at what he sees, the laws that he sees in life. And we'll see how we can use those for our own benefit and the benefit of our own society.